Or maybe you know how there's like how Doctor Who episodes go out into space? What if that's happening to us?
So these views are aliens.
Yeah. And we're their first contact. I'm gonna write the story. Why haven't I already?
Welcome to another episode of Jabber and the Drone, the movie review podcast that politely disagrees to agree. From Portland, Oregon, you are Richard Wally.
And from Garden Grove in California, you are Cassidy Robinson.
I am today.
Just today, you're Cassidy Robinson?
Just today. Tomorrow, who knows?
King Makalaka Makala.
I've been thinking about that. Yeah, I think I could go for kind of a monarchy kind of vibe.
Yeah, like that guy in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have this giant purple cape that I don't know what to do with.
Oh.
And it doesn't really go with the whole, like, chubby movie nerd thing that I got going on right now.
I think it does.
You're probably right.
This isn't something I had you get at any point, was it? For some ridiculous thing that I never came through with?
No. Luckily, this is just a bit I'm doing.
Oh, I feel better then. I feel much better.
Although I do have a black cloak in my closet left from one Halloween. Because you never know when you just need to, you know, go to a Black Sabbath or a Mass or something.
Well, yeah, or I wanted to say the Shining Orgy, but that never happened. Well, I mean, maybe it kind of did, but we just didn't see that part. No, Eyes Wide Shut Orgy. There we go.
There you go. So I was going to, I didn't know exactly where to put this into the episode. I figured we could just start at the top. Harold Ramis died today.
I don't want to talk about it.
Well, that's too bad because we're on a podcast.
Yeah, I know. It makes it kind of hard. No, Harold Ramis, wow. One of my favorite movies is Ghostbusters.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, you know, and it's sad, you know, he was one of the leading contributors to that. And
mm-hmm. Originally got his start on SCTV, directed a lot of movies, including Groundhog Day.
Was he part of Second City?
I believe so.
Okay.
It was part of that whole collective, that comedy collective, and in the 70s and 80s, and he was really funny, and he, you know, was kind of a big deal in the world of comedy in film, both directorially and as an actor. I think most people remember him as Egon, the brainy guy from the Ghostbusters, but he was also really funny in Orange County.
That's what I was about to say. He got really high in that movie, and I liked it.
It's a standout scene for a teen comedy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had a small part in Knocked Up, playing Seth Rogen's dad. And but it'll be sad. He died of a really rare blood condition. So it was sudden. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't expected. He wasn't, like, terminally ill for years kind of thing. And, you know, up to this point, there were still talks about a possible another sequel for Ghostbusters 3, but now I wonder if that's going to be the end of that. Not to make it into a selfish, you know, where's our Ghostbusters?
Right.
But if you could just do me a favor, Richard, and quit killing people.
What?
All of these great actors that have been dying, I know it's you.
Oh, so no, I'm no longer your weather wizard now that you live in a good climate. Now I just kill all the favorite, some of your favorite actors.
Stop it.
I am trying to kill your joy, so.
That's how you moved on.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so that happened and it's sad and there's that.
Yeah.
Moment
of silence.
Moment of silence. A moment of awkward silence, if you will.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, so you were trying to talk to me at the beginning of the show about True Detective, and I said we should probably talk about it here. What happened?
So we had some dinner with some friends, and then we went over their place, and they're like, you guys want to watch some True Detective? And we're like, sure, let's watch the first episode. So we sat there, and we watched it, and it took me in. Mm-hmm. I really, really enjoyed it. It's up to its fifth episode right now, and it's a weird, dark, moody kind of, I don't know.
Noirish crime thing.
Oh yeah, definitely. And I would say the neo noirish. It's very David Fincher-esque to me.
Okay. That's interesting.
But well, in a good way.
I've heard so many good things about it. You know, I have HBO Go now, or I have access to it anyway.
It's only 5 episodes right now, Cassidy.
Yeah, I know.
And I know people have mentioned it to you, so you didn't discover it, but I think you can do it.
Is that how it works with me?
Yeah, if somebody mentions a TV show to you, you will not watch it. almost a billion times out of one. You'd be like, yeah, I heard it's good, but... But if you discover it and turn people on, like, then you're like, yes. But then you only watch, like, one or two seasons. You're the most horrible TV watcher ever.
I am really bad at TV. But I remember once upon a time, like, not all that long ago, probably like 4 or 5 years ago, you used to, like, not be into TV. Like, I don't know, maybe you were in Argentina when, like, the golden age of television started. And you came back and we were, like, talking. You're like, oh, man, this show and that show and this show. And you're like, I just don't really like to watch TV. And now you're like get the fuck on it.
Well, I mean, yeah, golden age definitely hit for TV. That's definitely a factor in it. But I mean, it's also like life factors. Like I have a wife that's always liked TV.
Mm-hmm.
I at one point don't. But now that there's more of like some continuity and things tie together better, and there's some just genuinely good stuff out there, yes, I want to watch TV. Also, the way you can consume it. I have a really hard time sitting down through fucking commercials.
You're a binger.
Yeah, I'm a binger, and there's even in some cases on like the DVDs or even on Netflix, you can skip the recap, which I love.
Yeah, that gets really redundant.
Yeah, I even get sick of songs, like at the start of a show. Like,
yeah,
most of the time I'm like, fuck.
Have you ever watched an old show from like the 70s, like a sitcom even? Like they only have like 25 minutes to get a full episode in, counting, you know, maybe even less than that, counting all the commercials. But those old shows, I swear to God, were 40% intro.
I haven't for a while, maybe. I'll have to go back and take a look at that.
It's like, there she is, the character that we introduce every week, and here's her best friend, and the house that she lives in, and the dog, and the cat, and it just goes on and on and on, and you're like, I guess this was just their way of, like, filling in, so they didn't actually have to write anything but, like, 10-minute episodes.
Well, also, I think the old idea was always to have the episode be able, you could tap right into it and get a new viewer in at any time.
Yeah.
Which was part of the reason I used to didn't watch, because I was like, no, that's bullshit, this is boring. I've watched this character fuck up the marshmallow machine for the 3,000th time. I'm really done with the marshmallow machine.
That's my favorite episode, is the marshmallow machine.
I'm sure.
All right. Yeah, let's go ahead and get into the news. I was going to say a thing, but fuck it.
The Fantastic Four cast has finally been revealed. So for Mr. Fantastic, they have Miles Teller. For the Invisible Woman, they have Kate Mara.
Mm-hmm.
They also have Jamie Bell for The Thing, which is, you know, kind of a young, fairly pretty-ish actor for a giant orange rock monster.
Nothing like Michael Chiklis.
Yeah, not exactly. And then Michael B. Jordan is still going to be the Human Torch, which it almost seems like he was the Human Torch before anybody was anything.
Uh-huh. So
before there was a director, anything.
My question, obviously, I think we talked about this a little before. Sue Storm, Johnny Storm, brother, sister, different races. Are they going to be adopted?
It could be an adoption situation, or it could be a half-brother thing.
That's, they're pretty different looking.
It could still work.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to like...
In this day and age, you big racist, people can have...
I'm not going to, like, throw the massive, like, Michael Clark Duncan is the kingpin fit over it, but...
I thought he was great,
actually. No, he was, and it worked just fine, but, yeah, I don't know, I just wonder... What I'm really curious about is if they're not blood-related, do you think we could get some, like, kind of hot incest stuff going on?
That's where this was going. I hope not. That would make this a really weird movie.
It'll be like Flowers in the Attic, except for in outer space with mutants.
That would be interesting.
Be a different take.
Yep, it would be a very different take. You'd enjoy it more.
I don't know if I guess I would, because it's just like obviously completely insane and they don't give a shit about anything. So in that sense, yes, I would enjoy it.
Do I think it's a problem that this brother sister duo? No, I mean, I think the easy one is adoption. I don't know, it could be a lot of different things.
Yeah,
maybe maybe they're gonna go whiteface.
that would be problematic. Okay, so you're the comic book guy. Have they never ever Has there ever been an iteration of Fantastic Four where they weren't related?
No. So in the recent runs, I know the Human Torch died.
Oh.
Spoiler alert for the whole universe, Marvel universe. But I know he died at one point, and so the Fantastic Four didn't consist of the Human Torch, but other than that. But, I mean, the other members are... It usually seems like the other members are a female. And a lot of times that female character was the She-Hulk. So I don't think... If they bring him on to play the She-Hulk, that would also be an interesting choice.
Yes, so. It would. So many ways this could go wrong. I don't know. I hope for the best. A lot of people have complained about the casting. They're skewing very young. And they're going for this whole Gen Y thing with all of these superhero movies and trying to Spider-Man everything.
Well, it's also, to me, everybody complains about it, and I'm like, they're just mixing a little bit of the regular universe with the Ultimates universe and trying to tell the best movie they can.
Yeah.
And but so a lot of times I'm like, okay, you comic book nerds need to calm the fuck down and get back in your boxes and just stay there.
Yeah.
But
I like all of those actors, though.
So yeah, no. That's all I care about. If they're really great actors and they have a good story, they can make it work.
Sure.
And I mean, it's only been one movie, but it was a really strong first movie from Josh Trank, I believe it is the director. So it could be okay.
Yeah.
Could be good, even.
He has an interesting sensibility, so hopefully that'll work. I have a story, I think.
Okay.
Imbersol's aboard. Let me try that again. Imbersol's aboard to produce and script a Warner Brothers Space Jam 2 starring a vehicle for LeBron James, a basketball player. Maybe, maybe not. Apparently, his people tweeted shortly after this was announced that it's not true. But now they're saying maybe he just disagreed to it. So, I don't know. It's all sort of in the air.
A big sports interviewer
person
asked him, and they're like, no, that's crazy. So
are you more inclined not to believe it?
Yes.
Yeah. But the funny thing is when this was announced, everyone was kind of freaking out and like, oh my God, yes, finally the sequel I've been waiting for since 1996. Would you really need a Space Jam 2?
No, the first one has its time and place in history during the great basketball movement of the mid-90s.
Yes.
I don't think we're in that, you know?
Yeah.
And if they're going to do something like that, they should try another sport, maybe.
Hockey.
That would be a hard one, but yes, I would... And I think Wayne Gretzky is too old. Mm. I haven't heard of a big hockey guy for a while.
Synchronized swimming?
Yeah, that would be the best.
With the Looney Tunes?
Well, Michael Phelps was really popular for a while.
Yeah.
Like they need to get it right on, like, the, like when they have a famous, some kind of athlete. I would also say, what's his face? The biker.
Lance Armstrong?
Lance Armstrong, but there's kind of a...
Like a thousand different controversies with him?
Yeah. Well, that could be interesting, too, if they went with those.
Yeah.
But they don't make the version of movies I always...
Because, watch. As you recall, Space Jam takes place during a very interesting and controversial time of Michael Jordan's career, as he was transitioning from basketball to baseball.
Yeah.
And I think I've talked to you about this before, how Space Jam, the first movie, the only movie there is so far, is one of the weirdest mainstream movies ever made.
If you look at it
as just like the components of what makes that plot, you look at it and go, who the fuck was high and wrote this? Because it is bizarre on every level. I mean, to the point where in the middle of the movie, you have Bill Murray randomly showing up with the guy who played Newman from Seinfeld. And they invent these alien characters that had nothing to do with either basketball or the Looney Tunes characters, but they have to weave that in somehow. And it's so weird.
No, you are completely correct. It has some really weird elements in it. But it's funny because I can't see it that way almost as being super weird.
I know, because you just see it. You remember when you were a kid watching and you just kind of let it wash over you.
It was the biggest thing ever.
Yeah.
I think I had the like soundtrack and everything.
I don't know if I went that far. I think I had the blue basketball that you could buy from Pizza Hut.
Mm. Me with a Space Jam soundtrack and you with a basketball. What was the world? What was going on in the world?
I don't know. Days? It was a strange time.
It was dark times. Dark times.
What else do you have?
My other article is. So, Ride Along director, mm-hmm. Tim Story.
Yes.
You also are going to mention some of the awesome movies he's done. Why don't you
have those? Taxi, Barbershop, and the other two failed attempts at Fantastic Four.
Oh, look at that. We connected them.
Mm-hmm.
So, basically, but this Tim Story fellow, he's going to helm a movie called Diplomats. And it's going to be based on the relationship between Dennis Rodman and Kim Jong-un.
Mm-hmm. Connects also ruler. To Space Jam.
Yeah, in a little, in a lot of ways, he's kind of a small space alien that's trying to conquer somebody. So anyways, they're going to make a movie about their relationship because he's always going over there and watching the Harlem Globetrotters and him execute people probably. And I'm not sure what else.
Okay. I mean, this could be like the modern day The Clown That Laughed.
Wait, what? I don't know this movie.
Oh,
this is a strange reference. Please tell me.
Okay. Jerry Lewis made a movie in the 60s, I want to say, called The Clown That Laughs, about a clown that works, for the Nazis. In World War II and like lures kids into like the concentration camps and inside like the gas chambers to get killed. And then he watched it after it was assembled and decided nobody could ever see this movie. And to this day, nobody has except for people at the time who like, made sure that, you know, the movie was like locked away forever.
Is there like a reel still available of it? Like,
That's what people have been wondering for years.
That would be really exciting. I would like to see that. That sounds like the most horrific, horrible thing ever.
I'm waiting for a keynote release of that one.
I am as well. Keep that in. Yeah, keep that in my databank. The Clown That Laughed. Okay. I hope so. I hope the Dennis Rodman movie is anything like that.
Yeah. All right. It's an original idea, I guess, so there's that. Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg, the busiest people in Hollywood right now, when they're not trying to get their unoriginal stuff off the ground or when they're not trying to work on the Preacher television series, looks like the next movie they're going to work on is based on a book called Console Wars by Blake J. Harris about the competition between Sega and Nintendo in the early 90s.
It's exciting.
It sounds good. It sounds like the type of thing they should be doing.
I think it could be a lot of fun. I don't know much about the book or anything, and I don't know how serious of a take they want to go with it, but
I don't think it's going to be like Social Network or like Moneyball or something that's, you know.
Well, remember when we were watching King of Kong, mm-hmm. and we really wanted that to be turned into a narrative?
Yeah.
With these different characters. I hope this is kind of our version of that.
Yeah.
I think best case scenario, that's what it would be.
Yeah, or it could be something kind of like computer chess, like that kind of, but made with a budget. I don't know. I think this could be fun. It seems like I like the fact that it's based on a source material, so they can't just go, they're not completely unchained, and they have something they have to kind of adhere to, so maybe it'll allow for the movie to be more structured than they might let themselves be otherwise. And I like the fact that this is more kind of in their universe of the, you know, kind of when they grew up as people, and also, you know, nerdy type of stuff, but it could still be sort of character-based. I think this is exactly what they should be doing.
It sounds like this could be a fun project to see.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like I said, I want to see more from it before, I wonder how much drama they're going to wrap up into it, or is this going to be some, like...
I think it's going to be largely comedic. I can't imagine seeing them go really serious, but you never know.
Well, I'm wondering if there's going to be character... I don't know. That's where I'm at with it. That's mm-hmm. Is like, okay, what are we seeing from them? So...
Cool. Is that the news?
That is the news. We have finished the news.
I felt like there was another thing, but probably just one of the things we decided not to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, now it is time for the pet topic, and I believe it is your turn.
So I wanted to have a very loose discussion on the on time travel. Do you believe that time travel is actually possible?
Okay, so you really want to get into, like, the concept of, not anything to do with movies.
Maybe. We'll see. Wherever the road takes. No, it'll...
This ties in, I guess, a little bit with First Contact.
It's well, and our science fiction mumbo jumbo month.
Yes.
It does tie in with those things. And time travel is a big deal in pretty much all of science fiction. It's kind of a
trope.
It's a trope, and it's a big subgenre of science fiction. It's one that I know we both enjoy.
Yeah.
So is time travel possible? Don't avoid the question.
At this point, no. Although if time travel is possible or ever becomes possible, then to say at this point is sort of redundant, because once you have turned time into a fluid thing, then all time is kind of not linear anymore. You're just moving from one instance to another, like a snapshot, like a frame.
Right. Some would say, like in True Detective, that time is a flat circle, and it keeps just repeating on itself.
I've wondered
was that
before.
Vague and weird?
No, the time okay. is cyclical, that there is an end and then it starts over.
No, they actually talk about this a lot in True Detective, so...
Okay.
Besides that, though, do you ever, like... I was thinking about this. This is kind of weird. So, transitioning between your conversation earlier. So in True Detective, they talk a lot about time, and it's kind of... They have all these, like, really high concept, like, philosophical, like, idea bullshit stuff happening.
Yeah.
And, I don't. For some reason, my head went, you know, if there is a Marty McFly out there, is he the reason I have a bad day sometimes? Is he fucking up my life? Like, because he went back in time, did he ruin something for me? Was I supposed to be a millionaire or billionaire? And he screwed it up?
Yeah, sometimes, like, when I'm, like, in a rush to get somewhere, and I hit every single red light, and, like, I end up, like, turning the wrong way, and then there's this huge thing of traffic, and there's, or, like, road construction wasn't there just an hour before. I'm like, okay, who the fuck is fucking with my life right now? Like, who's time traveling and putting all of these pawns in place so I can't get to this thing in time to become the next world president or whatever it's supposed to happen?
That's where your mind goes to? Okay, yeah. Good. No, but so time travel as in
film.
As in film and literature and stuff like that. Like, what are some of your favorite iterations? Is there a specific type of time travel that you kind of adhere to or believe in any of those narratives?
I mean, the problem with time travel movies is that there's always a cyclical logic to those movies. It's hard to write one, first of all. It's hard to write one and have it make sense. You can always find a hole, or there's always a, but wait a minute, what if blah, blah, blah? You know, you can't really think about them too much. But as far as the ones that I really like, or the time travel rules I prefer, I'm probably a Terminator guy as far as just the rules. I think those rules are kind of a little bit more solid. Mm-hmm. I enjoy, as a movie and a series, Back to the Future a lot. The first one especially is one of my favorite movies ever. And I also, Primer is a really great time travel movie, you know, done on the cheap. And it's all about, you know, this very conversation of the logic of time travel. It's much more cerebral than either of the other two movies I've mentioned.
Well, that movie to me also, it's more of a, specifically Primer.
Mm-hmm.
That movie to me is more like an ethic debate.
Yeah. Because it's the debate happening in front of you.
Yeah, it's not necessarily the time travel. It's always funny to me when I have, like, people tell me, like, in different narratives about time travel, they're like, well, that part didn't make sense. I'm like, so you're a theoretical physician that is working on time travel? You know a lot about the subject?
Yeah.
And I don't know. To me, it's always like, I don't think you have to really understand the logic sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, for a lot of people I know, like a movie I really liked, and it does adhere to the Terminator roles, is Looper.
Looper was great. Looper was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and a lot of people are like, well, I don't think it could happen that way. I'm like, I don't really care. Bruce Willis came back in time to kill children. That's pretty badass. That's pretty much where I was going with it. Like, that's what I need from a time travel movie.
Well,
Bruce Willis coming back in time to kill children.
You know, generally speaking, Bruce Willis, or time travel movies. What was the other one he did? The other time travel movie he did? 12 Monkeys is a lot of fun. 12
Monkeys is a lot of good, too. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, time travel is just a storytelling device. It's a reason why something's happening. It's just there to kind of get, from point A to point B in the story. So mm-hmm. I don't really get too hung up on the logic as long as the logic is logical within the film and consistent.
Is there a film you can think of where it didn't do that?
Yeah, kind of. There was this movie a long time ago, not really all that well known or well regarded, called Push, starring Chris Evans and Dakota Fanning. It was kind of an X-Men ripoff.
That had time travel in it?
Well, one of the person's powers was they could fast forward and rewind time within like a hour or something like that.
Wow.
Around them. So they could change quick events. Like, if they, you know, somebody gets killed, they could like rewind it and whatever, save them. And it created a little paradox within the movie, if I recall. I mean, I kind of don't even remember this movie, to be totally honest. And I remember watching it being like, it's not consistent. Like, it was just kind of lazily told.
Yeah.
Even though the movie as a whole I didn't hate.
I can't remember the, what was that Paul Walker and Gerard Butler one?
Timeline.
Timeline, yeah.
With that was a Richard Donner movie, yeah.
That
was bad.
Yeah, it was bad. Yeah, I
but that was bad actually, because it was a bad movie. It wasn't the time do you travel remember, part.
That's what I was going to ask. I don't remember the time traveling being particularly the reason I didn't like it. It was more just, you know.
I mean, that was a really kind of standard time travel movie. They didn't even really use time travel that much as a device other than, we got to go back to the whatever times, the medieval times. And then they were pretty much just in medieval times the whole movie.
Yeah.
If I recall. Right. They had to, like, eventually jump back and do the thing.
They talked about markers a lot.
Yeah.
I remember that. Just because we made a big old joke about it.
The devices that they could keep, like, so you, I don't remember what they're even for.
They would mark your place in time or something.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, I like the whole, like, you go back in time, you step on a butterfly when you're hunting Tyrannosaurus Rex and changes everything or whatever.
Uh-huh.
I like that idea, but I don't think that that's the only, like, kind of narrative. To me, it's also a plot device that's just supposedly used to kind of like get you to think. Is there like any particular like themes or anything that you like about time travel? Like,
I don't know. I think there's an eeriness to it. There's that kind of, because honestly, I really, if we're talking for realsies, I don't think there's such thing as time travel or have been or will be. But if there were, I think it would be a more dangerous thing than the atomic bomb. It would be one of the worst things we could conceive of as human beings. That's a thing that just shouldn't happen.
Well, see, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Bill Gates went back in time. Or it was probably a more evil, more evil lead of a company out there, but that's the only I could think of.
Yeah.
But he goes back in time and he controls all this technology and fucks up our lives. I was supposed to invent Microsoft, not him.
Yeah, 10 years later.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, exactly. But that damn Bill Gates.
What are your favorite time travel movies? I mean, you like Looper.
Oh, of course, yeah. I really like Looper recently. Another kind of like, it's not exactly a narrative, but Source Code, I thought was a
pretty movie. Oh, yeah, that's a great movie. Yeah.
I think that has a kind of time, that does have a time travel element. And so I kind of like it when it gets broke up into there's all these different timelines.
Yeah, there's a lot of different
possibilities.
That's part of the whole like multi-strand universe theory.
Right.
Which is an interesting way to go with it, which I think is that's kind of what Terminator operates in. Implicitly, they never explicitly say that, but you kind of assume that's what's going on.
Well, I just so this kind of goes into the future with movies a little bit. I know both of us are hesitant about this film, but Days of Future Past.
Uh-huh.
Actually, I read a little blip on that recently, and apparently Days of Future Past really influenced John Cameron to make the Terminator films.
James Cameron?
James Cameron. There we go. Thank you.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So now we're coming like this weird full circle kind of thing.
Yeah.
No, I time travel, I think, can be a really interesting thing to kind of bring up about, you know, sometimes there are like events in our lives that we want to change, or there's things about us that we want to change.
Yeah.
But
there is a human, an innate human wish fulfillment in the idea. Yeah.
And it's an interesting concept, but I kind of, we were talking about another one of my favorite ones that we already talked about was 12 Monkeys.
Yeah.
And, that one, I specifically like it because it is like, it is a loop. And it's not only playing with is he crazy or is he not, kind of like is he a schizophrenic, but and he could be the whole time, but we're also talking about if there is time travel, I like that it doesn't change the course of time at all. All the bad shit still happened. Like, you can't actually change anything.
Yeah.
So I like it that it plays in those boundaries, and I think it's just an interesting device to kind of play with different ideas. So
yeah, I agree.
So that was our vague talk on time travel.
Is that Divergent movie about time travel? Do we know anything about it?
Divergent? No, I think it's dystopian kind of thing.
That's the Johnny Depp Wally Pfister thing, right?
Transcendence.
Okay, yeah.
No. Transcendence, I just watched. No, I just saw the trailer recently in theater. It's like the bad version of her. No, seriously, that's what it looks like. Johnny Depp becomes a bad robot.
Okay. Okay. I can't really tell what's going on in that trailer, but.
Well, that's another, that should have came up last episode when we should have talked about robots. because that's a new frightening thing in my world, but.
Fair enough.
Well, actually, it's always been kind of a frightening thing in my world, but no, I think you're right. I think time travel could be means to a very ugly, ugly. I don't want big corp, because if somebody discovers it, it's not going to be like you and me in the garage, probably. Like, Primer is best case scenario.
Yeah.
And that still was fucking, and it was still fucking ugly.
Yeah.
I imagine somebody, you know, somebody like that discovers it in a lab, though, and then it gets appropriated by some large companies, and they take control of us.
Google.
That's the only way I can see that happening.
Mm-hmm.
But do I believe it? I don't know. Theoretical science is always one of those things where I'm like, okay. I think humans are really, we're a lot stupider than we think we are, even though we're like as far advanced as we've ever been right now.
Yeah.
I still am like, no, we're still just as dumb as we were ever. Might as well beating each other in the head with clubs still. Like, that, I'm serious. I mean, maybe this shows my cynical side, but I...
Your lack of faith in humanity?
Yeah, so... I personally, I don't know if there's time travel or not, but I do think it's an interesting narrative in...
Yeah. Yeah. You're allowed to explore a lot of things with it, both on an entertainment level and a thematic.
Yeah.
Well, let's go ahead and move into our review that has nothing to do with time travel.
No. Unfortunately.
Except for the time travel that was going on in my brain, remembering all the movies it wanted to be.
There could be a sequel, though, with time travel.
Maybe.
For it.
That's what this movie needs. We'll be talking about Paul W.S. Anderson's Pompeii. Before we get started with the actual discussion, did you see it in 2D or 3D?
I kicked up for the 3D just randomly to entertain myself, because I knew what I was getting myself in for.
Uh-huh.
And I also, I mean, I bitch about it, but I don't see things in 3D that often, so I thought... might as well try it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I tried it in 3D.
Cool. Well then maybe that'll, affect your review a little bit. We'll see. Or, we might have a disagreement on some things.
Okay.
Kit Harington, plays the lead character. His name is Milo. This takes place during the time of the High Roman Empire.
Worst gladiator name ever.
Yes. Milo!
I really wanted the other character played by whoever. I forgot what his name is. He's a good actor, though, as well.
Yeah.
Otis. I really wanted him to say his name was Otis.
And his name is not. Made... It's Atticus.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Milo is a slave who his Celtic tribe was killed by the Romans, led by Kiefer Sutherland. And... he is put into slavery from a young age, to be a gladiator, as it were. He gets sent to the island of Pompeii, where...
It's not an island.
Whatever. the tribe or whatever, off the outskirts of Italy, Pompeii. Where he's, to fight and die, with the other gladiators. He falls in love with the, princess, I guess is what you would call her. Played by Emily Browning from Sucker Punch. And, her parents are played by Carrie Ann Moss and, Jared Harris, who are slumming it in this film.
That's something I wanted. Were you kind of like after, I didn't know how many people were in this like movie. Like there's quite a few pretty recognizable faces and people that I've seen other places that have done really well.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really kind of weirded out that they were in this movie.
Yeah. Well, I think if you look at the screenplay, if you look at what it is without, I mean, they should know better because they should know they're in a Paul W.S. Anderson film. But I think if you just look at it on paper, it's like, oh, it's going to be a swords and sandals thing in, you know, classical era. And, you know, Gladiator won Best Picture once.
Right.
Inexplicably. But, yeah, so basically what you have here is kind of a rehash of Gladiator for the most part. The first two-thirds of the movie feels almost beat per beat like it. Then in the middle of the movie, famous volcano, right outside of Pompeii explodes, and then it becomes a disaster film for the last half of the movie. And not a very good one at that. What did you think of Pompeii?
Pretty much the same.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting not to. I just wish we would have planned better and we should have done what everybody else did and went and saw the Lego movie together this week.
Oh, is that what everyone else did?
Yeah, I think Lego won this weekend again.
Yeah, yeah.
As well. So, I'm saying with the rest of, you know, moviegoers.
The populace, yeah.
Yeah, the smart ones. The ones that don't subject themselves to this every week. No, it was bad, but it was really weird because I felt like the 3D in it was really good.
Okay, interesting.
And so, like, the scenes and some of the establishing shots and stuff like that were, like, randomly, like, really good. And, like, kind of, like, where the shots, like, the cinematography wasn't bad in the film. And so I was kind of, like, confused by that. Because usually his Resident Evil films, I usually am, like, just kind of... It just feels like it was just... It feels all plastic and like there's nothing there.
Mm-hmm.
And this did not feel like that. I thought the 3D in it was actually pretty decent. The acting was really weird in the film to me because there were scenes where you're like, oh, these are actually like capable actors. And then you're like, okay, they're just like reading the script. They're looking off and like literally reading it off of cue cards or something.
Yeah, usually good actors are really bad in this movie. Jared Harris has nothing to do. Yeah. Could have played that. They could have got a key grip to come in and do what he was doing.
Well, what was strange, though, is you had these weird, like, character moments. Like, there's this weird where he's, like, asking his wife all these questions.
Mm-hmm.
So you get the sense that the wife is actually the smart business, like, person in the film.
Yeah, he's like, very wishy-washy.
Yeah, there's all these very strange moments in the film that are actually kind of like, well, that's semi-interesting. What the fuck?
Yeah, there's this whole political subplot dealing with Rome coming to take over Pompeii as a city and add it to their empire. And there's this whole thing about how Kiefer Sutherland wants to take Jared Harris's daughter, and she was, like, in Rome trying to escape him. Right. And Kiefer Sutherland.
His affectation in this was really weird.
Everybody right? else is doing your, like, average, normal, we're doing a Swords and Sandals, classical epic, so we'll just talk in kind of a British-ish accent. You know, the basic, there or, without you, blah, blah, blah. And then Kiefer.
Or they are British.
Or they are British and just talking their regular accent. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kiefer Sutherland decided he's going to do it like he's in an Oscar Wilde play. And he's talking in like this really London act, like specific stiff upper lip London accent that just sounds so wrong coming out of his mouth.
Yeah, it's pretty entertaining. It's kind of entertaining and then it gets a little annoying and then it gets entertaining again. we should have planned for this, honestly. I don't know why we didn't see this coming. Like, we should have seen this coming more and planned ahead and accordingly.
Yeah.
To not watch either of these films. But we didn't. And so, the only thing that I went into doing this was actually my Friday, because we debated, because you're like, I don't want to watch this. And I said, well, I don't want to watch this. And so this was my logic. I was like, I will look on Rotten Tomatoes the day of that. The only time period that I have to watch the movie,
mm-hmm.
and whatever is higher, I will see. And I believe that Pompeii was 4% higher than 3 Days to Kill at the time.
Yeah.
Now I believe it's 1% higher. a single percent.
That's so it was a lose one or lose one situation.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you know what? I was kind of entertained in a bad way, which...
Yeah.
But see, with Paul W.S. Anderson, I almost have a similar kind of... I almost have a similar... It's almost like a Lars von Trier film, except not interesting and not like... But it's the challenge to me. It's almost like, okay, I'm not afraid of you. I'll go see this. Like, that's kind of what it is for me with most of his films. And then, you know, I had friends in the area, and I saw on their Facebooks why they're going. And, like, 9 times out of 10, the girl's response was Kit Harington.
I don't know who this person is. Why should we know who he is?
He's in Game of Thrones. He's one of the lead
characters. Oh, okay. That's why I don't know them.
Yeah. But, I mean, he was pretty ripped. I will give him that. And he has his shirt off, which he doesn't in the Game of Thrones
mm-hmm.
almost ever because he's in, like, this really frozen part. And so he's covered in this big old cloak all the time. So so kudos for him for letting to finally
to
be the beefcake he wants to be and take his shirt off.
He has absolutely no charisma. I don't know if he has any more in Game of Thrones, but he certainly doesn't here. He's the worst, main character to try and follow.
Really? I thought he was kind of like everyone. He had these really, he was really horrible throughout most of it. But then there'd be like these weird scenes where like all the actors or just a couple of the actors would like have really good affectation and would just be acting really well. And you'd just be like kind of like almost taken out of the film because they were like switching back and forth and they couldn't decide what was happening. I was very confused by this movie a lot. And not because, not in like it was like high subject matter or anything, but just because it was like really bad most of the time,
mm-hmm.
except for these weird little moments. But overall, I would probably agree with Rotten Tomatoes, and I'm just, you shouldn't see this film. Like, unless you have a specific reason or you want to make fun of it.
Yeah, it's, I don't even think it's fun enough to make fun of, though, because, I mean, this is Paul W.S. Anderson, like, okay, I'm going to do a serious film now. Like, well,
makes it funnier to me.
Yeah, and he just completely falls flat on his face, or he gives up halfway through. He's like, never mind. I'm just going to do a junky B movie like I always do. But it's not even like an entertaining junky B movie. It's just poorly made. I saw it in 2D, so all of the 3D stuff looks really obvious and looks really, it's directed for 3D in a way that just like does not lend itself to 2D at all. All of the special effects that are meant to pop out look like cardboard cutouts flying in front of the frame. And just obviously CGI. All of the action sequence, all the fight sequences in the gladiatorial battles, which you would think like, you know, just on a visceral level, okay, cool, some hand-to-hand combat, that's at least fun to watch. Nope, because it's cut like in montage every single time. So it's like punch, cut, slash, cut, flip, cut. You can't tell what's going on. And he's just an immensely untalented director. It blows my mind that this guy keeps getting worse.
I did dislike it, but where I would give him like, if this was like if I was a school teacher, I would probably give him like a 40 on it and say you should try again. You would give him like a 5 maybe.
I give the movie, I haven't written my official review yet, but I'm probably going to give the movie something like a D. I think there is.
Wow. Okay.
I'd
give it a D.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think there is an element to it in that sort of B movie sort of way that, I don't know, in that Paul W.S. Anderson-y kind of way.
To you struggle even saying it. I don't want to give him even one positive remark.
I don't, because I think his kind of cynical filmmaking is reprehensible, but I understand that he makes movies a certain way that people are tricked into thinking they enjoy it.
Fair enough.
But it's really bad. It looks really bad. I thought it was ugly. I thought the color correction is really flat and kind of unappealing. The best parts of the story are ripped off either from Gladiator or Titanic. And I just don't.
I wasn't very surprised. Like I said, the only things that I was like positive about was I actually thought the 3D was decent. I was kind of into I wish there was more volcano.
More volcano.
Yeah, I just that's kind of
that volcano was terribly underdeveloped.
Truly. I wanted more volcano and less gladiator stuff, actually.
Yeah.
Like, I wish they didn't have to go back in time and take the slave up to... Forget all that baloney. Like, what they needed to do is just start with some people in Pompeii, chilling.
Yeah.
And then volcano goes off for an hour 20. That's what I wanted from the film, kind of.
To an extent, what happens, but...
No, you only get like half of a film about that. So yeah. You only get like 20, 30 minutes of that. No, I know that I actually want it to be worse than it is almost, I guess.
Well, see, that's what I thought about The Last Resident Evil. It's like, I was actually able to vaguely enjoy Resident Evil Retribution because it was just so bad. It was just like Pop Rocks and Coke. It was just totally empty calories. Ridiculousness, over the topness. Like, he has allowed himself for those movies to be more or less just kind of tech demos to look at. Whereas this movie, he's like kind of trying, which just makes his faults stand out even worse.
Oh, see, I don't know. I had about a similar experience. I would say he's fairly consistent in my books, but I don't think he's trying harder or anything. It seems pretty par.
Yeah. This would have helped the movie, but there was no like zombies on motorcycles with bazookas.
That's what you wanted in the movie, then. Is zombies riding on motorcycles with bazookas. Okay. That's our notes to Mr. Paul W.S. Anderson, is put more volcano and motorcycle riding zombies with bazookas.
I think those are notes that he would take gladly.
No, I really do want more volcano, though.
Okay. So,
should we move on?
We should, please.
Okay, good. Please don't go watch this movie.
And it looks like you're not, so.
Yeah, so kudos. Moving on. Mm-hmm. So to Star Trek.
Our Netflix Contact. Homework, yes. Which you assigned me last week, Star Trek First Contact. Which I'd never seen before. You had. I was a bad nerd growing up, so I didn't really start watching the Star Trek movies until actually kind of recently. Anything that we talk about in this segment is available on the Instant Queue. So why don't you tell us what Star Trek First Contact is about?
Basically, you're kind of catching back up with the crew. I think they fill you in the movie pretty well. What's going on with them ish, but it's the next generation. Mm-hmm. So Jean-Luc Picard, blind engineers and robots at the helm.
Geordi,
correct. And Worf and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
So basically what happens is the Borg attack, and then they flee in time from being completely destroyed to a time where they can basically enslave and assimilate the whole human race back in time in a pivotal moment. And the next generation crew go back in time to this moment to make sure it happens and also to stop the Borg.
Yeah.
And that's generally what the movie's about.
And it takes place on Earth for the most part. I mean, there's the spaceship stuff with half of the crew. It seems like in all these Star Trek movies, even the old ones, they always have to split the crew so that you can have a B plot and an A plot. And then there's the stuff on Earth with, James Cromwell. I think that's the actor's name.
Correct. Yeah.
From Babe.
He's also in American Horror Story.
An American Horror Story, 6 Feet Under. He's been a lot of good TV.
I actually like him a lot.
No, he's a really, really, really great character actor. And he, plays this future, icon who makes first contact and changes the course of human history after World War III. And so there's a bit of that. We have to make sure that this important pivotal thing still happens so that our future isn't totally fucked up. Mm-hmm. So there, you know, there's kind of like two sort of stresses or strains in the movie going on that they have to address.
So there's kind of, yeah, because what I get from that a lot and what I really like about that storyline,
yeah,
is that whole like meeting your heroes thing and how it's not.
It's never like what you thought it would be.
Exactly. And then also just like that, I think you get a lot of what's great about this Star Trek movie compared to the other new generations and actually a lot of the first generation ones is that this is a lot about the characters and not much about anything else. And you get a lot with them meeting this like hero and this character, this James Cromwell character. You get a lot of this like self-doubt and you kind of almost get like a modern day inflection of like what we are, I think.
Yeah.
You get this like, we're this debauchery people who just want money and to settle on an island with naked babes.
Well, yeah, it's you know, that Roddenberry style, political commentary, subtle political commentary weaved within, you know, this kind of action sci-fi plot.
Exactly. But then the other one you get, the other big, well, I guess you get kind of a duality because you get the one, the character moments with Jean-Luc Picard and Data.
Yeah.
Where you get the one being assimilated in the Borg once, and you get these really like, you kind of actually get this side out of him that I maybe you see more in this TV series, but I don't remember it happening often. I've seen about 50% of
The Next Generation.
And but you get this really intenseness from him in the whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
And you get this really like they compare him to Captain Ahab a lot. But then from Data you get this, you know, he got a wish fulfillment out of it.
Yeah.
So you get this weird temptation from it. And so it's kind of they've kind of got this interesting stuff. And then the lead Borg lady.
Yeah. She's creepy.
She's creepy and kind of attractive.
Really? That's interesting.
Yeah, I find her kind of attractive.
See, I don't so much. Cables
coming
out of
when you take her out of the makeup, I'm not, though, to the actress. But when you put her in the makeup, I am.
It's like, go Borg or go home.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I really enjoyed this movie. I mean, I've seen, I think, all but a couple of the... I think Insurrection now is the only Next Generation movie I haven't seen. And it's, I think, clearly the best of the Next Generation movies and, you know, a good contender against, the original cast films. It moves really well. It has interesting things to say. It knows how to, it almost feels a little bit more like a classic Star Trek film, like something like Star Trek IV, or like a Wrath of Khan kind of style. And I think maybe that's what they were kind of going for. Mm-hmm. I do think some of the special effects and some of the set decoration looks a little under budget, even for its time. I understand it's made in 1996, but it sort of feels, or 94 even. But it kind of, it looks a little TV-esque.
Well, I think they also, the Star Trek Next Generation, they never had the same kind of budgets as some of the newer Star Trek films do in comparison.
Yeah, yeah.
Even some of the old ones, they were kind of lower end. They tried to go for brains over.
Yeah. And there are some moments in the movie where that's referring back to the show and where they were at that point in seasons or whatever, where I kind of had to just let my suspension disbelief go and go, okay, they're talking about something that apparently mattered at that time.
Well, no, because this came after the show was already ended. I think we were in, like, Voyager time, or, if not Voyager,
I thought that Star Trek, Next Generation had, like, nine or so seasons.
I think it's seven.
I'm gonna look it up.
Okay, do it, motherfucker.
I'm gonna. Star Trek, Next Generation, yeah, it started in 87. And ended in 94, you're right. So it was the same year.
Boom! Nerded, bitch!
But yeah, I definitely recommend this movie. I think it's a lot of fun. I do think it's kind of a good place to start if you're not a Star Trek person because there is a little bit more action. It is more character oriented than some of the movies. Certainly well, most of that series.
Well, I was kind of analyzing the dialogue too, because they were doing a lot of fill in for you.
Uh-huh.
Like where the characters are and why the stuff is affecting them. And they were giving you, I felt like they were giving you a lot of exposition, but without like beating it over your head or making you be like, okay, this is boring bullshit. Like I feel like they do that pretty well.
It's because there's immediately stakes in the story.
Okay.
Which is what I think the best Star Trek movies do, is you set an event early on. It's mm-hmm. like, oh no, there's this thing we have to solve, and there's some immediacy. So then that way, when they're like, okay, well, these guys, they do da 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 da, and you're just going over stats and character development and blah blah blah, it doesn't feel expository because we need to know that thing to understand the stakes.
Right.
So yeah, I think, I mean, there was a little bit of kind of boring expository stuff, I think, within the first 15-20, before, you know, the major events that, caused the plot to happen really get going. But, I for the most part, I really did enjoy it.
Okay.
I wouldn't say it's my favorite, but I enjoyed it.
It's one of my favorites, but I like quite a few of them, so I mean, that's not
saying a lot.
But this is one of 8 movies I really enjoy from Star Trek. So, I mean...
Yeah. All right. Well, next week, I'm going to have you watch Doug Trumbull's Silent Running, starring Bruce Dern. Again, this is a major sci-fi classic that I've never seen. The critic Mark Kermode always goes on and on about this. When he's not going on and on about The Exorcist, he's going on about this movie.
Mm.
And I'm interested to see it, since Doug Trumbull was Kubrick's special effects guy for 2001.
Well, I'm also excited to see Bruce Dern. Isn't this like 70s?
Yeah, this is like 72, 73.
Oh, okay. So yeah. we're seeing a young kind of dickish Bruce Dern.
Yeah. Okay. And again, anything that we talk about in the segment, Silent Running and Star Trek First Contact, is available to watch on the Netflix instant queue currently. And if you want to contact us, at our email, you can at jabberinthedrone@gmail.com. And, you know, I'm just saying this, I'm going to throw this out there. I know a lot of you know us personally in real life, if you're listening at all. And you might think to yourself, there's nothing that I need to say in an email that I can't just tell them in person, but send us an email. If you have an idea, if you have a comment about something I said, if you violently disagree with our reviews, even if you're going to see us in a couple of days, save it for an email. We'll read it on air and get the final word without you present.
Or if you want to say it anonymously, as long as it's not too mean. If you're like, you guys are a bunch of douchebags and we hate you, then we're probably not going to read your email. But if you want to say, but no, if you do want to be anonymous, just put that and we'll...
Okay, yeah, that too.
Read it up.
You can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/jabberpodcast. Like us there, and you can see when we post news items in between episodes that we might not talk about, as well as any updates or comments about the show itself. You can subscribe to us at iTunes and Stitcher Radio and Pocket Cast and be able to listen to us on your favorite mobile device. You can find our RSS feed and our regular archives at Podbean, jabberinthedrone.podbean.com. You can read my movie reviews that I do weekly for the Idaho State Journal at saladforkreviews.blogspot.com. You can read my semi-regular content that I contribute to the Seattle-based website, The MacGuffin, at mcguff.in/author/Cassidy. And Richard, you can find at his new blog, rdwolley.weebly.com. So that's rdwolley.weebly.com. And I saw that you posted your review for the 1973 Wicker Man.
Mm-hmm.
So that's available there to read, and I would assume comment on if you choose to.
Yeah, that's at the blog portion of the website. That's that I'm trying to do like at least monthly reviews of something, whatever I'm feeling at the time. This month, I just thought I'd kick it off with a movie that I recently have discovered and really like, Wicker Man. And yeah, so go check it out and see what I thought about the original Wicker Man.
Yes.
Not that other shitty Wicker Man. I haven't seen it, actually, in all fairness. But
yeah, maybe you'll have to challenge yourself with that one, too.
Oh, can I?
But until then, we will talk to you next week.